Hi, welcome to Today on Africa Yesterday. I am Femi.
And I am Lola.
If this is your first time listening to us, welcome, and we do hope that you come back. Please check out our previous episodes so you can know what this podcast is all about and what we'll talk about throughout this season. If this isn't your first, thank you for sticking around till this episode. We hope that you continue to check out new episodes, and we hope that they do not bore you. Thank you for joining.
The Democratic Republic of Congo, or the people of Bantu, as they were known before colonization, celebrates their independence every 30th of June. In this episode, we'll be talking about their pre-colonial, colonial, and post-colonial era. The Democratic Republic of Congo is located in Central Africa, and it is the largest country in the sub-Saharan Africa, and the second largest in Africa, occupying approximately 2.3 million kilometer square.
That's really low.
That's a whole lot.
You know, it's after Algeria, which is the largest country in Africa currently, which is, it's a whole lot of land space and, you know, revenue from resources from Earth, I assume.
Yeah, it is.
But contrastly, they do have a low population, you know, compared to the land mass.
Yeah. But as they expand, they're going to
occupy the land.
The large area square has hosted the Bantu people for over 3,000 years.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so the Bantu people,
you know, they've been there for 3,000 years. You know, they actually moved from Western Africa and Central Africa.
They migrated from Western Africa and built their kingdom,
the kingdom of Bantu there.
Yeah. And that was before the arrival of Belgium in Congo. Yeah, the kingdom of Congo actually ruled in the west around the Mount of Congo River between 14th and 19th century.
And they really, you know, established themselves before the colonization started.
Yeah, but they were still able to be colonized.
Yeah, they were very rural.
Yeah,
you know, the Belgians obviously came with probably, okay, we have a better thing for you and all this. And they actually came with force, you know. So they took them by force.
And also in the central east of Congo, the Luba and the Lunda kingdom ruled from the 16th to the 19th century. Oh, that's more like Nigeria, when Nigeria was
before colonization,
when we had our Eastern, Western, Northern
monarchs.
But yeah, we had our monarchs, so it's more like that.
Yes, so that's for the pre-colonization of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Okay, so on to the beginning of colonization in Congo. Before King Leopold II became King of Congo and named his Free State, he was actually exploring Congo Basin from before 1865, where he became King of Belgium, and he sponsored Henry Morton Stanley to do this job. So Henry Morton Stanley got to Congo and kind of like explored the land, surveyed the surface, and they were interested in that space for so long, even before the scramble for Africa began during the new imperialism period, where different European countries segmented Africa and took different colonies.
And that lasted for 1881 to 1914.
Yeah, that was a lot. And you know, it was 1914 that there was amalgamation in Nigeria, so yeah. It's kind of like, that's the period. So in 1885, in the meeting of Berlin, in a Berlin conference, they gave Congo as a private property to King Leopold II of Belgium.
And he got there and named it Congo Free State. And they were not free.
Exactly. You know, it was kind of like the irony at the end of the day, because he got there and he imposed force on them, and a lot of things happened. You know, debt and all, we'll talk about that very soon. But the point is, Belgium actually gave him the state, you know, to explore their valuable natural resources, to impose power, you know, colonize them, and to and for a religious missionary to bring Christianity to that place, and
also get to kind of develop the state.
Exactly, he kind of used more of power than any other thing, you know.
He got to Congo in 1885 and named it Congo Free State, like we said.
Yes.
And in 1885, he implemented the first public.
Yeah.
Like
that was really brutal for us. I think it was like
it was a brutal force.
Exactly.
And it consisted of white officers and blacks. Soldiers.
Yes. So it was racist. It was
racism.
Red. It was bloody.
It was brutal.
You know, even when he discovered ivory, he started exploiting them. You know, taking the ivory,
and
selling it to other countries.
Work
for it.
To get the ivory, and
exactly.
Those who don't deliver their
quota
per month, they get to
operate.
Get to call their names or their...
They were punished for it. Even this thing continued throughout, like, the revolution of rubber in the old world when, you know, rubber was really expensive and was used for automobiles in the 1890s. That really, you know, made him to use force on this Congolese then.
And the amputation of their limbs for just this quota they are supposed to give to the government.
It was a brutal,
it's a very brutal thing. And this lasted for 23
years. That was sad because the Berlin didn't do anything till...
They didn't know.
I don't know. You know, it's possible because, the transformation of information
then was very slow.
Exactly. And not until the casement report made by Roger Casement, an Irish independence fighter, detailing the abuses of King Leopold II of Belgium and Congo Free State, did the Belgian actually, know about it and try to stop it.
Yes, and for that 23 years, millions of Congolese died.
I think that's
millions
one of
them died. They died from diseases. They died from the exploitation. They died from the brutality and they just wasted.
Like, yeah,
they wasted away.
A lot of them died, and we can see that a lot of the population that died most was actually the children, which is quite sad then, because I think that's one of the things that's affecting their population today. For me, Congo is supposed to be in there like 200 of millions. So I'm thinking like that is probably a cause of, the reason why their population is still on the low side today.
Yeah, and after the casement reports, the Belgian government took over their administration due to the reports of the abuses
and the deaths
that have gone on in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Let's say Congo Free State at that point.
Exactly.
that Free State thing still cracks me up. It still cracks me up.
It's irony.
You feel like it's a lot of irony. It's a lot of irony.
Yes. So on the 15th of November 1908, the Belgian government came and took power from King Leopold II, and they ruled based on colonial trinity. That means they ruled based on the state, the missionary, and the private companies. So the private companies and the state quite had like similar, vision for Congo at that point. So they built industries, the state used their power to collect lands from all these, local monarchs and all.
Yeah,
so the private companies could do their work, they could build their industries and everything. So it was kind of like the state and these private companies is like the public and the private companies right now. They came together and totally subdued the land of Congo. And they came also as missionary. And I mean, I think the missionary is the best thing that's happened to Africa in a whole, and even Congo, in as a country. The missionary came and
helped
Sekoto and everything. But one of the major things that happened to Congo was the World War I and World War II during the Belgian rule. They really helped the Belgian government during this period. I mean, they provided resources. Congo served as a a source of revenue massively for the Belgian government. They produced copper in the World War One, and they shipped it to America. The Nazis bought it. So, you know, copper was really, really selling them because of the bullets and everything. So they provided all those ones, which was really cool. And in the World War Two, they also helped the Americans. I mean, they were, at that time, they were exploring, they were selling out uranium to the U.S. that the U.S. used to build the bombs, even the bombs that destroyed the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. The uranium they used for that, for those bombs, were from Congo. So I really think Congo played a huge part in World War One and World War Two.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the things that's affecting them till today, because like those things actually, you know, slow their growth and everything. So they've gone through a series of wars, in total about four wars. You know, World War One, World War Two, Congo War Two. It's really a lot of stress.
A lot. But the Belgian rule actually helped in the urbanization and development of programs around the 1940s to late 1950s,
before they kind of like came and were like, oh, we want to get our independence.
Yeah. I think the Belgians they helped them to develop their country, to develop their state.
Yes.
I think maybe the development stopped after they get their independence.
Because, well, we can't really say exactly, but I believe it was more slower. Like
that. Yeah, it's just...
Because
just
after the independence, you know, 5 years or so later, there was Congo War One. After that, there was Congo War Two. It was a lot of stress on the country, so the development actually slowed.
Yeah, it's definitely going to slow down because this war thing.
Exactly,
it's going to destroy lives. It's going to claim
property. And those lives are going to reduce labor force and everything.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And we can see
that labor force was labor force that built around the 1950s, yes, when the Belgian rule was them. Still in Congo.
And this
in
labor
Belgian
force,
Congo. They built a large labor force that's, yes, even doubled other African
colonies. Colonies.
So the Belgian rule actually helped the people of Congo. At least they had some positive effect.
It was so better than the Free States.
Yeah, and I think it's still okay. Maybe due to what happened after their independence. It's really affecting their country right now.
Yes, it's still affecting Congo right now.
A lot. It's still affecting them.
So, I think that's it for during the colonization era. But just a quick note, before the end of the colonial period, during World War II, people started coming up and were like, we want to gain independence, we want a free town, Russell. One of that person was Simon Kimbangu. So Simon Kimbangu, you know, started the Kimbanguism, which was a group of people that were pro-independence and anti-colonization. They marched against the government, but their protests were actually passive and not active, so they did not, you know, pose too much threat in the government. But at that time, they were still, you know...
I think they were still enjoying what the Belgian government was
doing. Maybe, but they were, you know, a lot of them were actually crazy about the government, like, they're ruling them, and, you know, about the racism and everything, so they would obviously be so annoyed about that fact.
Yeah, so, and after the independence of the Belgian, mm-hmm, after their independence, they changed their name for four times. I think this is due to the political instability.
Yeah,
in their country, I think they have a lot of political issues. Yeah, they really do have a lot of political issues, and it's affecting the growth and development of their country even after independence.
Yes.
For four times they changed their name.
I mean, like, Republic of Congo. Like, as a president was coming in, they were changing their name
due to their different
ideologies. And yeah, there was this president, his name was President Mobutu Sese Seko. So he came and he was like, I want this country to be named Republic of Zaire. It came in 1971, and it was like everybody should try and change their European names, if they do have, to something African, something more natural, something more raw.
It's not a bad thing to actually want to implement your tradition, but
yes, exactly. It shouldn't
some areas of the government.
Yeah, and I think it was even cool. You know, to me, it was cool. It was really nice if we have like countries like Zaire today.
But because they feel like, okay, individual presidents, so this political
instability was a lot of stress.
It's a lot of stress on the Congo. Then the Congolese, I mean, so it started from the Republic of Congo.
Yes. The Democratic Republic of Congo, then the Republic of Zaire, and now the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Of which is still to today.
Yes, and we hope they maintain that. I really hope they maintain that.
When another president comes up.
Have actually maintained that
Democratic Republic of Congo.
But the thing we can say is that it's kind of like two, because the first two presidents that maintained Democratic Republic of Congo were father and a son, so...
Okay, that's true.
Let's hope they maintain that, and we do wish them happy independence.
Yes, we wish them happy independence. Their independence is on the 30th of June, and that's on Tuesday. Come Tuesday, they will be celebrating their independence.
The 30th of June, 2020.
Yes, 2020. They were celebrating their independence.
But let's kind of like talk about the
Happy Independence, Democratic Republic of Congo.
So talking about the post-colonization era, it's before that, like I was saying before.
They gained their independence in 1960, alongside with Nigeria
and some other countries.
They gained their independence earlier, before Nigeria. Yes, they did. Theirs.
And, you know, after Simon Kimbangu came and was developing his own, you know, ideology, a lot of people continue to bring this old pro-independence spirit, and therefore, when the resistance was very huge in the Belgian government, they had to hand over the power to Joseph Kasavubu, who was the first president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, which was named the Republic of Congo as a den. He ruled for 5 years, from 1960 to 1965, and his rule ended very sad, kind of, because the person that came up to take up his power, who was Joseph Désiré Mobutu, he had a relationship with the Americans. No, with the he had a relationship with the Belgian, which actually had left them at that time, but did not really leave them. So he had a relationship with them, and they helped him overthrow Joseph Kasavubu.
Most countries that were colonized, their colonial masters don't really leave them.
Exactly.
Like that, yeah. So they're still with them. I don't know, maybe to monitor the development, or because they still have.
They took part in their development and their organization. I think for one, the people that have, you know, that are Belgians and have actually come to stay in Congo and have their families and all, they, you know, already have a place they can stay. So for them to go back to Belgium might just be unnecessary.
Yeah.
And also, but the government actually left, but they still have this relationship with them, to leave the relationship
and just go back to the country. Exactly. Maybe a little bit stressful, especially those that were given birth to
there,
you guys. So.
But we can say that the involvement of Belgium in overthrowing Joseph Kasavubu is not necessary, because the Joseph Kasavubu was actually helping the Soviet Union at that point to, they were helping them against the Americans and the Europeans at that point. So when the Belgium saw that his vision was not their vision, then they supported a coup d'etat from Joseph Désiré Mobutu, and he overthrew him in 1971.
So no, I was 1970. I was Joseph's rule. I guess it was better than the first president.
It wasn't really better. He also tormented them. I mean, he tormented them. And during this period was Congo, the first war of Congo.
Oh.
Yes.
So but the post-colonial. I think the fact that they were not under this slavery thing, like they are free, was an advantage to them. Like, you know, to live their life freely is an advantage in this colonial thing, you get?
Yes.
So colonization,
but
they gained their
freedom,
independence. They gained their independence and they were able to live a free life. I think that alone is more like being, is better than being
colonized. Yeah, better than being colonized, yeah. Obviously. But the sad thing about it is, even after the freedom from the Belgians, there was still this racial segregation, you know.
Yeah, of course, it can't all wipe away just like that.
Yes,
and that's why we need to keep educating,
you know,
ourselves,
keep telling everybody, keep that telling everybody, and you're white, keep... you're brown, you're black, we're all human beings.
Yes,
it's,
and
something, and I'm so proud of the movements right now. I mean, everybody's really against black segregation, and it's a good thing.
And because Black Lives Matters also.
Black Lives Matters, White Life matters, Me
everybody
Too,
matters.
Everybody Life matters.
Everybody matters.
Nobody is left out from anything. But the fact that we are like trying to segregate blacks, you know, from the beginning of the world coming together, it's hard.
Yeah, but we're trying to get back together right now.
Yes.
And that's a nice improvement.
Congo was really, you know, endured a lot of stress and strain from war and political instability. Thank you for staying till the end of this episode. We do hope that you enjoyed it, and we do hope that you come back for more. To support us, please follow us on Instagram at AfricaYesterday, and to send us a voice message, visit arco.fm/AfricaYesterday/message. Goodbye.